VSiN Weekend Morning Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of the VSiN Weekend Morning Line on this Game 7 Sunday. I'm Tim Murray, live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Just got the latest from behind the counter, courtesy of Thomas Gable, who they will be cheering for. And he said a Pacers win wouldn't be the worst thing for their sportsbook, the Borgata. Now, is that the same at every other sportsbook? I don't know, but certainly an indication that maybe they'll be cheering for the Indiana Pacers here tonight. A lot of betting insight coming your way, as well as insight on what it takes to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. Luka Garza going to join the program coming up in less than 30 minutes. Of course, plays for the Minnesota Timberwolves, who came up short in the Western Conference Finals against the Oklahoma City Thunder. What do they do so well defensively? And, you know, it was certainly surprising when you think back to Game 6 and how that game unfolded. And Thomas alluded to it in our interview just a moment ago about the poor performance we saw from that Oklahoma City offense. And what was staggering to me, too, was that Oklahoma City only forced 10 turnovers and turned the ball over 21 times. And I want to hit on this because I asked JVT this question yesterday regarding NBA Finals MVP. And we asked at the time when the Thunder were minus 20, when we asked him yesterday, I think the Thunder were around minus 285 on the money line. And SGA to be NBA Finals MVP was around minus 205. Right now, looking at money line prices, you're looking anywhere from minus 280 here at Circa to as low as minus 265 at DraftKings. I do think, you know, sometimes you get too cute. You know, you always are wondering, all right, you know, should we go this route? I really do think if you think Oklahoma City's going to win tonight and minus $1.95 is palatable enough for you, I think I would much rather go that route. We talked about a bet that I made yesterday on the show where I was just kind of putting things together, putting LSU to win the College World Series at minus $1.90 with SGA to win NBA Finals MVP at minus 205, came out to plus 127. I don't really see a, I can't see a path. SGA could go out and have 2 points tonight, which is very unlikely. And if he had 2 points, I don't think Oklahoma City's winning. But I would be rather stunned if the Oklahoma City Thunder win this game, SGA doesn't play well. That's number one. And number two, what does Jalen Williams have to do in order to jump over SGA? I don't know. Like, go for 50 and SGA go for 10? But this series, the consistency has been there from SGA. And when he didn't play all that well in Game 6, guess who played worse? Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams was terrible in Game 6. Minus 40 plus minus for Jalen Williams. So if you do think that the Thunder win tonight, and I do think looking at SGA at minus $1.95 is a better way to go than laying a money line price around minus 265 at DraftKings, as high as 280 here at Circa. As for Pacers, if they were to win and who would win MVP, I'm not as convinced that it's definitely going to be Pascal Siakam. Now, is he the favorite over Tyrese Haliburton? Yeah, absolutely. But when I look at the odds board right now, SGA, this is DraftKings, minus $1.95 to win NBA Finals MVP, Siakam plus 350. Haliburton 10-1, Jalen Williams 11-1. I think that makes sense in that order. Is there a way Tyrese Haliburton wins NBA Finals MVP? I do think there is a way. I really don't see a way Jalen Williams wins NBA Finals MVP outside of injury to Shea and Jalen Williams goes nuclear because of the consistency that we've seen from SGA all throughout this series. Even in the game that Jalen Williams went for 40. It's not like SGA was some bum in game five, right? In that game, he still went for 31 in that contest. He was the reason they won game four on the road, SGA was, with that 15-point fourth quarter. So I actually do think, and I hate using the word value, but I think based off of the money line price that is out there in the market, actually do think there is a little bit of value on SGA instead of playing the money line at $1.95 versus 265 or 280 here at Circa. But tonight, we know things tighten up, and we're going to get to how the history has told us the under is the look here. But this is a Pacers team and a Thunder team that have both played in Game 7 so far in their collectiveness. The Pacers haven't done it here in this postseason. But remember, last year against the New York Knicks, facing a Game 7 on the road, and they won by 20-plus. Miles Turner remembers that and will take what they learned last year in a Game 7 and apply it to tonight.
We got to lean on everything we learned throughout the series and just playoffs as a whole. You know, I think, we take everything by a game-by-game basis, but it's been a long, grueling, 2 months in the playoffs, so we just need our experience.
Miles, you won a Game 7 on the road last year against the Knicks, a different team, different year. Can you draw anything from that experience that might help tomorrow?
Yeah, you have to. Just the environment, the stakes, everything that comes with it. So, we draw on the experience that we learned and just roll the punches.
How big of an advantage is it that the Indiana Pacers did face a Game 7 last year on the road? But it's not like the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team that steamrolled their way through the regular season at 68-14. They faced some adversity this postseason, right? They lost a Game 6 on the road to the Denver Nuggets, faced an elimination game on a Sunday. We were talking to you guys on that game. Prior to that one, some people thought that line was a bit disrespectful, down to 7.5-8. Well, Thunder went out and won 125-93. Got off to a slow start and then bulldozed the Denver Nuggets. Jalen Williams, remember, we talked to Matt Moore on that Sunday afternoon. He did not play well, I believe, in games 4, 5, and 6. Had a big performance in game 7. So they've got some experience on their side. Jalen Williams, his thoughts on bouncing back after a game 6 and what it means to play in a game 7 tonight.
The swings of a game, I feel like in a game 7, feel so much louder than they do in any other game, except maybe apart from like an elimination game. I feel like tomorrow they'll feel a little different too, just because obviously it's last game of the season. This is for the championship. So I think it's just what game 7 taught me for Denver is just like the swings, like 3 feels like you're down 10. You know what I mean? 1 feels like you're down 5. Like that's just like the swing of the game, and what's going on feels much larger. So it's just kind of about like honing in your emotion, like understanding the state of the game is big for game 7.
You know, it's kind of funny when you think about Jalen Williams and the poor performance that he had on the road at Denver in that 119-107 loss in the second round of the playoffs. He had 6 points. He was 3 of 16 from the field in that game. And I remember talking to Matt Moore, who will join the show coming up in less than an hour, and we'll get his thoughts. But Matt Moore said, this is a buy-low opportunity going into Game 7 of that series. I'm not saying that here. We'll get his answers coming up in less than an hour. But it was a buy-low opportunity on Jalen Williams. Is this another buy-low opportunity on Jalen Williams? When you think back to Game 5, one of the better performances of this postseason, the 40-point performance we saw from Jalen Williams in Game 5. But he followed that up with just 16 points, as mentioned, negative 40, plus minus. He was awful. What do we see from Jalen Williams tonight? Do we see that bounce back performance here this evening for Jalen Williams? When you're looking at his player prop tonight, Jalen Williams sits at 22.5, minus 10 to the over, minus 20 to the under at DraftKings SGA, if you're wondering, at 33.5. A guy that I imagine many of you have enjoyed backing from a prop standpoint because they were pretty low, is TJ McConnell. TJ McConnell has been a revelation this postseason and kind of plays into who the Pacers are. They are a team with incredible depth and a team that they trust different pieces coming off the bench. And TJ McConnell has definitely been a very trusted piece this postseason, and especially here in the NBA Finals. And he knows, going into Game 7, that there is plenty of pressure. How are they focused on the task at hand tonight against the Oklahoma City Thunder?
I think they're lying, obviously. It's about reeling yourself back in and getting yourself back to the preparation and all the stuff we're trying to do to try to go out and win. Obviously, your mind's going to wander. You're human. But just bringing yourself back in and saying, you know, the moment, stay in the moment right now and worry about the future when it's there.
DJ McConnell, over under for him in this game is sitting at 9.5. He has just been the spark plug that you would imagine he would be for this Pacers team. And you think back to game five, his run himself was the reason they got back into that thing. All right, before we hit a break, by the way, TJ McConnell over under sitting at 9.5. He has gone over that in 4 of the 6 games. Before we hit a break, I do want to hit this before we welcome on Zach Cohen, and that's the total, because it has been talked about quite a bit. The total sitting now at 214.5. Thomas Gable, interestingly enough, said he thinks they'll actually need the under in this one. When you look at history in the postseason, in the NBA Finals, what do we get in Game 7s? The last 4 Game 7s in the NBA Finals have all gone under by an average of 17 points per game. You think back to 2016. Cavaliers and Warriors, 93-89. The final score in that one. You think back to 2013, another low-scoring Game 7 between the Heat and the Spurs. Do we get it again tonight, or has the market adjusted too much? We'll ask Zach Cohen what he thinks about the total. He'll join us on the other side of the break. But hey, folks, if you're betting on sports, why not try the races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. Sign up at firstbet.com, that's the number one, stbet.com. Use the promo code VSIN200 to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days up to $200. Zachary Cohen joins us next, talking Game 7.
You're tuned in to the VSIN Weekend Morning Line.
Game 7 tonight, ladies and gentlemen. They say it's the best two words in all of sports. Game 7. First time in 9 years we'll get a Game 7 in the NBA Finals. And hopefully we can get an epic performance and some memorable plays like we did 9 years ago. The chase down block when it was tied 89-89. The Kyrie Irving shot. It wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing game 9 years ago. It was intense, and maybe we get another low-scoring affair. I'm going to go ahead and say we probably will get more than a 93-89 final. Just going on a limb, the way that these two teams play. But maybe I'm crazy. Maybe we'll get a mid-90s type of final score tonight between Oklahoma City and the Indiana Pacers. Well, let's talk more about it. His column is up right now at vsin.com. It is our senior editor, Zachary Cohen, who joins us right now, courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line. Follow him on social media at Betting on X. I'm going to make people wait a little bit on your play that you have, because I want to talk total. And I don't know if you have a play on the total, but I'm curious to get your thoughts, Zach, on the total, because this is going to be discussed quite a bit all across the network heading up to tip-off at 8 o'clock Eastern. Has it moved too far? When you look at the history, the last 4 Game 7s in the NBA Finals have gone under by an average of 17 points per game. But Game 1 closed 230, Zach, and now this is at 214.5. So you're going to get the people who say this number has just gone too crazy. What do you make of this total tonight sitting at 214.5?
Yeah, I just had no interest in touching it. I had a pretty strong lean on the under, just because, like you said, like historically, these games are pretty ugly, and they have been ugly the last few times we've seen them. And honestly, Game 6 was probably a performance in which we didn't see the offenses play all that well. That was a game that went under. I just think that these are going to be two teams that are going to be a little bit tight. I know that with this Thunder team, we kind of look at the against the spread numbers on the road, and I did mention this on VSiN.com, but I feel like playing a Game 7, you know, a do or die game where the entire season's on the line, that pressure is going to be very similar to the pressure of playing a road game in these playoffs. So I really don't expect the role players to shoot all that well, and I think we'll see some stars struggle in this game. So I really do think it's going to end up being a bit of a dogfight, but I will say, like, the way that the Pacers play and the way that the Pacers want to play made it too hard for me to ultimately pull the trigger on that because the number is so low.
The Indiana Pacers have been a team that I believe have won 10 games outright as a dog this postseason. They're the best cover team in the playoffs at 14-8 coverage, covering around 64% of the time. So that leads us into what you wrote up. And, you know, worth noting, Zach puts this thing out immediately. So sometimes he gets the best of the number. Sometimes maybe the number will move against him. And in this case, he got the best of the number here. You took Indiana plus the points. The market agrees. We're down to 7. What do you make of this line, and why ultimately did you take Indiana plus the points here?
Yeah, so I took plus 8.5 because it was either -125 for that or -112 for plus 7.5. I just felt like that was a better value. I mean, I don't really feel strongly about 8.5 versus 7.5. And honestly, I still would play it at the 7. I just don't trust this Thunder team. I feel like we've seen it all throughout these playoffs. The road performances offensively, like I mentioned, have just not been there. This has been a team that has looked like it completely lacks an offensive identity, and they're playing against a team that knows exactly who they are, even to the point that, you know, Halliburton was banged up last game. They took a little bit out of his hands, and they were still able to get everything going. I just think you look at Indiana, the way they move the ball, they pass the ball over 100 times more than Oklahoma City in game 6. I think that that's going to really translate well, especially when looking at, you know, Rick Carlisle, who is a champion as both a player and a coach, going against Mark Daigneault, who I don't think has done a great job in these playoffs. It's a huge coaching mismatch to me, and it's a huge kind of trust factor offensive performance where I just know what I'm getting from the Pacers a little bit. I think Indiana's also really good defensively, and we saw that in game 6, the way that they were helping or not helping on Shea. They just kind of had an answer for everything. I would just be really surprised if Oklahoma City kind of beats the brakes off them. I just think that the Pacers have a little bit too much to throw at them.
Zachary Cohen joining us courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line. His column up right now on VSiN.com, breaking down his best bet, which is Pacers plus the points. When he wrote it up, he took 8.5, and also Pacers on the money line. So let me ask you this. If you do think the Pacers are going to win, is it so easy as when we think back to Super Bowls, right? It's, hey, if you're going to take the team to win, go ahead and take the quarterback to win MVP. That's more than likely going to come home. What do you make of the current market for Pacers to win NBA Finals MVP? Siakam's the favorite amongst Pacers at plus 350. Halliburton 10-1. Is it as cut and dry as if they win, it's going to be Siakam? Or do you see a path that Halliburton could regain the potential NBA Finals MVP tonight?
I definitely see a path where Halliburton could do it. If Halliburton flirts with 20-10, kind of looks like himself offensively, and, you know, Siakam isn't the one kind of, you know, stirring the drink for them in this game, I do think that there's a really good shot that Halliburton does end up winning it, just because I do feel that Halliburton's, like, health and him performing the way he usually does is kind of the most important factor when looking at whether or not this team wins games. And I do think that voters are going to agree with that. But having said that, you know, Siakam has been the best player through 6 games. We have seen some weird things happen with this award in the past. So I just wouldn't be looking at it that way. It's not as simple as, you know, if the Chiefs win, we know exactly who's going to win the MVP.
No, I agree. And, you know, it's funny because that's my mindset. And I said, look, if you think the Pacers are going to win, I don't think it's crazy to put a little bit on Halliburton at 10-1. On the flip side, Zach, curious to get your thoughts, and I don't want to lead the witness here, but when I look at the odds for the Oklahoma City Thunder, I think, you know, once again, I hate the word value because it's overused in this space all the time, but if you think the Thunder win this game, I think saving 70 cents off the money line on SGA to win MVP is actually a pretty good bet.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, I think that the Jalen Williams to win MVP stuff has gone a little bit too far. It's not like SGA has been awful in this series, and I do think if we look back at this 7-game series and Oklahoma City wins it, kind of the big moment to me was, you know, SGA winning that game in Indiana in game 4, where he hit the 2 huge shots, the step back 3 to cut it to 1, and then, you know, the step back, you want to call it a push off jumper to put them up 1. That was what won them the game in that game. I know Williams played well there too, but it has not been, you know, big enough of a difference for me to give it to Jalen Williams over SGA, who has been the MVP of the regular season, I believe has been the MVP of the postseason to this point. Yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, I think that SGA is out there at a pretty good number.
Follow Zach on social media at BettingOnX. He's our senior editor for VSiN.com. Once again, his column up at VSiN.com right now. You know, people might not know this, but Wednesday night is the first round of the NBA draft. Me and Matt Eumanns will be on the air live. And right now, if you're wondering, what are the odds for Cooper Flagg to go number 1? You know, minus 20,000. That is where he sits. But there are some bets out there, courtesy of DraftKings, that intrigue you. So let's get to a draft position prop that is of interest to you. Let's go to Noah Essengay. Over under is 9.5, minus 35 to the over, plus 105 to the under. You've made a play on this.
Yeah, I have the under on Noah Essengay at 9.5. I just really think the teams are going to talk themselves into his tools. He's a 6'9", you know, kind of power forward, small forward that can play everywhere on the floor. He's very athletic. He has gotten a lot better as a shooter, as a processor, just kind of the kind of guy that, you know, front offices tend to fall in love with. We're just talking about, you know, big wings that can, you know, impact games on both ends of the floor, that can slide up and down the lineup. I'd be really surprised if he falls in a draft where I think the consensus is that after two, you know, that there, you lose some of the upside that you're getting in those first two picks. And it is pretty important to me, at least right now, that the Raptors are picking 9. And that is the type of player that Masai Ujiri is, you know, tend to fall in love with in his career. Just these, you know, toolsy players with tremendous upside that they can develop and get in there and potentially turn into a star, because they're not confident, you know, that the stars are going to want to go to Toronto. So I'd be really surprised if Essengay falls by 9 and Toronto still has that pick. I mean, there is a chance that they do trade that pick to Phoenix. It sounds like they're in, you know, the conversations for Durant, but I could also see Essengay going a little bit earlier too.
So another bet that you gave out on VSiN earlier this week was Jeremiah Fears out of Oklahoma, and you gave it out at under 7.5. The market has moved. It's now under over under 6.5, juiced over at $1.40. And at this point, you are not willing to bet under 6.5, correct?
Yeah, I mean, the one with that is that there have been so many links of Fears going to Brooklyn at 8 that I felt that if teams want him, they're going to have to jump Brooklyn. And it's really as simple as that. I think he's going to go 7 or sooner. I do think that a lot of front offices, just based on what I've been reading, I don't have, you know, sources or anything, they believe that if you don't get Dylan Harper, potentially the best on-ball creator that you can get is Jeremiah Fears, and he's a player that maybe has, you know, long-term potential as a franchise player at the guard position. So I think the teams are going to want to jump Brooklyn. So I do say if you could see a 7.5 at any point this week, I would definitely jump on the under there. Other than that, maybe you do get, you know, Fears to go to the Nets. Maybe they'll move up themselves. So I'd be keeping an eye on those two things this week.
Game 7 tonight, and then the NBA draft on Wednesday. Zach's going to be very busy with both of them, and he's got his column up right now at vsin.com. Zach, always appreciate it, man. Best of luck with your bets tonight.
Thank you. You too.
There he is. Zachary Cohen joining us courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line. You could follow him on social media at Betting on X. What will it be like facing the Oklahoma City Thunder tonight? Luka Garza going to join us in less than 5 minutes to give us that answer. Of course, plays for the Minnesota Timberwolves. But just a reminder, folks, if you want to know where the action is coming in, well, guess what? We have those exclusive betting splits from both Circa and DraftKings. You can get access to those by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber, and you can do that for as little as $9.99 for your first month. Check it out, vsin.com/subscribe. T-Wolves center Luka Garza joins the show next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
A Sunday morning, Game 7 Sunday. We are going to be catching up with T-Wolves center Luka Garza here in just a little bit. Can't wait to sit back and watch this one tonight. Just had Zachary Cohen give us his thoughts. Taking a look at our betting splits over at vsin.com, which you can get access to if you're a VSiN Pro subscriber. Right now, 69% of bets taking the points with the Indiana Pacers, 62% of the handle, 72% of the bets on the over. I do have a small play on the under. We've talked about it. We'll revisit that in hour number three. Also in hour number three, Matt Moore will give us his thoughts on what he's looking at for game 7 tonight. And we, of course, will check in with Wes Reynolds to give us his thoughts from the Pacers' standpoint. But I'm excited to have our next guest on, a man who got to see him up close and personal just a couple rounds ago. Joining us courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line is Luka Garza of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Luka, appreciate you jumping on, man. I know you've been all over the place. So you as a fan, and I know, you know, is it hard for you as a T-Wolf, you know, being right there on the cusp, is it hard for you to watch these NBA finals?
It is. It is, for sure. I mean, especially when you feel like you had a good enough team to be in there and to be competing for a championship right now. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's game 7. So that's what everyone, you know, kind of tunes in to watch. So I'll definitely be watching tonight and very excited to see who can come out on top.
So when you think back to the series you guys had against Oklahoma City, what were some of the main bullet points from Coach Finch to try to slow down this Oklahoma City offense led by SGA?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is, you know, disrupting Shea. But I think the main thing that you have to do against Oklahoma City Thunder that we tried to do but weren't as successful is slow down, you know, Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren. I think they're just – obviously, last game you saw that Chet struggled, and, you know, that kind of leads to the Pacers winning. You know, those two guys, when they step up and they play well alongside Shea, you know, it's hard to beat them. And, you know, I think Shea, just with how, you know, balanced his scoring and his how many different areas he scores from, it's really hard to slow him down. You know, he's going to get to the free throw line. He's going to do all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of living with him a little bit and then taking away some of the other guys is kind of the objective.
Luka Garza, Minnesota Timberwolves, joining us here courtesy of our Progressive guest line, getting us ready for Game 7 of the NBA Finals. Of course, Iowa legend. We're going to get to what you're doing in the state of Iowa this week. Some cool stuff going on across the state today, this week for you and your academy there. But you mentioned Chet Holmgren. I imagine a guy that, you know, as a center, probably some of your scout, you were very involved with slowing down Chet Holmgren. What have you made of his, I'll just say, you know, struggles a bit? Because he was great against you guys, really great all season, and so far in this series he's seemed to struggle, especially the last couple of games. Luka, what have you made of Chet Holmgren, and do you expect him to have a solid performance tonight against the Pacers?
Yeah, I mean, I do think he will bounce back and have a really, really good game tonight. You know, I just think he's too much of a force in a lot of different areas to not have that type of game. But you know, I think in general, you know, I think a little bit of it is experience. You know, he's still a young guy. You know, and dealing with the physicality of the playoffs is another level, and especially the finals. It just jumps and jumps and jumps in terms of intensity. And you know, I think Miles Turner is an elite defensive center, and I think it makes it hard on him because he's a guy that can go out and close out there to the three-point line, but then also has the foot speed to kind of contain some of the dribbles. You know, I think that's Chet's advantage a lot of the time is playing against, you know, centers who either don't want to come to the three-point line where he can, you know, lace it, and then, you know, guys who do come all the way and he can go past because of, he does have the, you know, the ball handling and the speed and just the ability to get to the rim as well. So I think Miles Turner has just done a really good job. And even when they put Pascal or they switch matchups and, you know, Obi Toppin or whoever it is on him, they've all done a really good job of kind of taking away some of the things he likes to get to.
Luka, what is it about that home court, that atmosphere, that is so challenging to win in Oklahoma City? When you look at the results, they've lost two games this postseason. Both, they honestly should have won, right? They blew game one of the NBA Finals. But against you guys, I mean, it's wild the difference you see from this team at home versus on the road. So what can you say about just the atmosphere and why it seems like this Thunder team plays so well at home?
Yeah, it's incredible what they've done. You know, that home base, those fans are insane. I think, you know, after our playoff series, you know, it took over my number one spot as craziest environment in the NBA. You know, they got those paper noisemakers. You know, we walked through one day after shoot around and we just had to see what it was. And so we folded it up and tried to make the sound, and those things are loud for one person. So imagine everybody's in there. You know, they all got the t-shirts on and they're just going crazy. So it's definitely one of the craziest environments, and the team feeds off it. You know, they love that. And, you know, it seems like it's just never ending, no matter, even if you start to play well and hit a couple shots, you know, that they don't get any less loud. So it's definitely credits to them for having that type of environment. But, you know, I think for the Pacers, you know, they can have the confidence knowing they have won a game there. And they've already got that, you know, that monkey off the back, so to say. And so going into this game, I think it's just, you know, game seven, you know, anything can happen. So I think the home court advantage isn't as big of a factor.
Luka Garza joining us here, courtesy of our Progressive guest line, of course, plays for the Minnesota Timberwolves and is an Iowa legend, number retired, National Player of the Year. Is it written in the Constitution that you have to hate Tyrese Haliburton?
No, I mean, I definitely, you know, obviously in college, you know, we had our battles, and, you know, We were able to come out on top. I'll take that. But no, especially anyone coming from the state of Iowa, you want to root for this. I think that changed for me, when I had Monte Morris on my team last year and I became really good friends with him. And, George Niang has always been, just an awesome, friend to reach out to as well. So I think once we leave college, we obviously always will have our, battles of who we think owns the state, but we all know who the real answer is. So I don't have to worry about that too much.
But what do you make of Tyrese Haliburton, the way that he's played? Look, everyone's dealt with injuries. To see him deal with that, to come back, to play the way that he did in Game 6, Lucas. So when you look at, kind of the straw that serves the drink in Indiana, even though Pascal Siakam statistically has probably had a better NBA finals than Tyrese, what have you made of Halliburton's play? And, if they're to win tonight, what do you think we have to see from Haliburton?
I think you have to see what he's been doing. The way he pushes the pace and throws the ball ahead, I think that's what unlocks Pascal Siakam at a different level. The way he's able to get the ball in transition and just attack. I think he helps everyone out. The OKC, the thing about them is when you play them in the half court, their gaps are just insane. When you're trying to drive, you just see hands. Alex Caruso, Jalen Williams, they're all there. And it seems like there's no openings. But the way that Tyrese plays and how fast he plays and how he gets the ball out of his hands so quickly, and just Indiana in general, but obviously he is the straw that stirs the drink. That pace allows him to not have to go against OKC's half-court defense, which allows them to get easier buckets and score. So I think that's, especially in a Game 7 where that half-court defense is going to be locked in, you're going to need to get out in transition. So Tyrese just has to continue to do what's got him here. And, obviously he's on a run that, not many of us have seen, especially with his clutch performances and ability to end games, close games, and obviously just, battling through what he's battling through. So, I expect him to show up tonight and to show out. It's going to be a fun one.
It's no doubt going to be a fun one. Luca, appreciate the insight, man. And Luca Garza, academy.com. Make sure to check out his website. He's got some really cool events going on this week all across the state of Iowa. Luca, appreciate it, man. Best of luck this offseason. We'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
There he is, Luca Garza from the Minnesota Timberwolves, joining us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. And some unique perspective, no doubt, when you think about Luca and, going up against that Oklahoma City Thunder squad. And I do think Chet Holmgren, if he bounces back, is so vital. Think about how he's played so far in these NBA finals. Against Luka and the T-Wolves, he was averaging over 18 points a game. Here in this series, averaging just 11 points per game. So what do we get from Chet Holmgren tonight? What role players step up? And ultimately, at the end of the day, we had, Zach on. We'll get Matt Moore's thoughts. We'll get Wes Reynolds in hour number 3 as well. But does that home court take it to the next level? And Luka just hit at it. This year put it over the top for him at most daunting environment in the NBA. And that has been something that we have seen come home in droves. This team playing so well at home and really struggling on the road. I've only covered one game this postseason on the road. And that was that very fortunate, we'll call it lucky cover in Game 4. So right now, as we look at it across the board, Oklahoma City still a 7-point favorite total. We'll call it 214.5. There's some 215s out there. There's a couple 214s out there as well. Matt Moore will join us coming up top of the hour. We'll get his favorite bets for Game 7. Wes Reynolds, our Indiana resident here on VSiN, will join us in hour 3 as well. But on the other side, I want to talk a little college football with you as we are less than 9 weeks away from the start of the college football season. What teams had the most notable coordinator changes? We'll dive into that a little bit on the other side of the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Having Game 7 Sunday, Tim Murray with you live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. As we look behind our shoulders here, point spread still sits at 7 in favor of the Oklahoma City Thunder, but it has moved in favor of the Indiana Pacers. We had Thomas Gable on from the Borgata, and they're already down to 6.5. So there are some 6.5s out there in the market. Has it moved too far, or do we see what we've seen in a lot of these game sevens? Last game seven, we saw the underdog won outright in the Cleveland Cavaliers. You just look at history, things have been tight. And we'll talk more about the total and all of that, certainly in the final hour of the program. In that final hour, top of the hour, 15 minutes from now, Matt Moore from the Action Network, who has jumped on this show a handful of times, actually joined us right before we had Denver and the Oklahoma City Thunder in game seven a couple of weeks ago. So he will join us, give us his favorite thoughts, and then also joining us in the final hour of the program, we will check in with our guy Wes Reynolds and what does he make of his Indiana Pacers chances here this evening against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But if you know anything about me, anytime I can weave in a little college football, I'm going to do so. And we've been doing this pretty regularly here on the program in the final segment of Hour 2, talking some college football, getting you slightly primed for the upcoming college football season. And earlier this week, I had Ohio State legend Bobby Carpenter on the show, and he still lives in Columbus, very involved with the Ohio State football program. And I think the number one question regarding Ohio State, who at DraftKings are the betting favorite to win the national title, as you look around, it's either Texas or Ohio State to win the national title as your betting favorite. But yesterday we discussed the questions at quarterback, and would it definitely be Julian Sayin as the signature caller, as the signal caller for the Ohio State Buckeyes? And Bobby Carpenter was not so convinced. He thinks that Lincoln Kindholz could maybe, with his athleticism, past Julian Sayin. So we'll see how that ultimately plays out. I think one of the things that's kind of being overlooked a little bit, at least here early on in the preparation point of the offseason, is that Ohio State has to replace not one, but both of its coordinators from last year's national championship team. So after they won the national title, Penn State put the full court press on Jim Knowles. There was some kind of awkwardness there with Jim Knowles and Ryan Day, whatever it was. Ultimately, Jim Knowles, thought of maybe to be the best or one of, at worst, one of the best coordinators, defense coordinators in college football. He's now at Penn State. Notable, right? Penn State going all in this offseason, getting Jim Knowles to run their defense. Last year it was Andy Koltnicki from Kansas to run the offense. But the offense is one that's getting a little bit underlooked or overlooked, I don't know, however you want to define it. Because Brian Hartline is believed to be the best receiver coach in the country and one of, if not the best recruiters in the country. But what do we know about him as a play caller? Last year, it was Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly was tremendous at what he did, ultimately helped guide them to a national championship. You heard when he left UCLA, because remember, last year, Bill O'Brien took the job to be their offense coordinator. Then he left to take over Boston College, and then it was Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly wanted out of UCLA as the head coach. He wanted to call plays. He goes to Ohio State for 1 year. Now he's here in our backyard with the Las Vegas Raiders as the offensive coordinator. So I asked Bobby Carpenter earlier this week on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast about Brian Hartline. How involved will Ryan Day be as the play caller? Because that was a big deal when he went out and got Chip Kelly to be a little bit more hands-off when it came to the play calling. Will he be much more involved now that Brian Hartline is a first-time offensive coordinator for the defending national champions? Here's what Bobby Carpenter had to say.
There's always conversations that happen, sure. And even with Ryan and Chip. And the important thing is that you have that relationship where you can talk things out. But I think this is going to lean heavily on Hartline this year. And they tried to look at doing this a couple of years ago, and maybe Ryan wasn't fully ready to relinquish those play calling duties. And then I think he began to realize just so much now in college football is outside of the white lines and the preparation that goes into running and being a CEO basically of everything, which is, very, very difficult to do both. So Brian learned a ton under Chip last year, and he's like, I was hoping he'd stay for 2 years just with everything. And when you're a receiver, learning the run game element, which Chip was so good at, can be tough. And so being able to dive into that with Chip, I think, was really, really big. And I think, Day has given Hart a lot of confidence. He's allowed him to run this spring, and I think it's going to be his show moving forward. And I think everybody feels pretty good about that.
All right. Think it's going to be his show moving forward. As we mentioned yesterday, it's not like they get an FCS team to open up the season or a directional Michigan school to open up the season. It's Texas. It's the other favorite to win the national championship. Right now, point spread sits at Ohio State -3 for that Labor Day weekend showdown. And look, it's not just replacing Chip Kelly. It's also replacing Jim Knowles. Matt Patricia comes in, and on the podcast, which you can get wherever you get your podcasts, Bobby Carpenter, very complimentary of Matt Patricia. And he said, look, full disclosure, his last pro season, Bobby's last pro season, he played under Matt Patricia in New England when he was the defensive coordinator. So a quick primer here on notable coordinator changes across college football. And I think when you look at Ohio State, lose both of their coordinators. Is that going to be a significant drop-off? Ryan Day, obviously very involved when it comes to the offensive side of things, but the defense, is Matt Patricia going to be a seamless transition from one of, if not the best, defensive coordinator as he goes to a Penn State? Penn State. How about Penn State? Look, James Franklin, I believe it's now 1-18 all-time against top five teams. And I believe that one, if I'm not mistaken, I believe the one victory was when they were favored. As James Franklin, the pressure is on him this year. They are all in on this season. They got their wish. They got the whiteout on September 27th against Oregon. They have to go on the road to Ohio State November 1st, but they have a bye prior to that game. Win total sits at 10.5. There's no excuses for Penn State. You've got a veteran quarterback in Drew Aller coming back. You've got arguably the best running back room in the country. Really good defensive line. Offensive line. Went to the portal. Upgraded the wide receiver position, which you desperately needed to do. And you upgraded the defensive coordinator position as you bring in Jim Knowles. Now, I'll say this. I don't think Tom Allen was a bad defensive coordinator. And I actually think when you look at Clemson, a team that is getting a ton of hype this preseason. I had Ari Wasserman on the podcast from On Three a couple of weeks ago, and he said he slammed Clemson at 20-1 to win the national championship, and that move number has since moved down to 14 or 16-1, somewhere in that ballpark. But Clemson and Dabo doing things to make them a little bit uncomfortable. For so long, it was everything in-house, promote from within. Now, what has Clemson done the past couple of years? They went out and got TCU's offensive coordinator a couple of seasons ago. Last offseason, they got Tom Allen. I think Tom Allen will be a nice addition there from the defensive coordinator position. Also notable, Notre Dame lost their defensive coordinator. Al Golden spent 3 years in South Bend and was a massive addition when Marcus Freeman became the head coach. He moves from DC to head coach. They don't promote from within with Mike Elston, who ultimately left to go to Michigan, and they went out and got Al Golden. And universally, it wasn't really applauded. Oh, Al Golden? Really? The former Miami failure? Former Temple coach? And he was great. Won the Broyles Award last year. Is that going to be a significant drop-off for the Irish as they bring in Chris Ash, former, once upon a time, Texas defensive coordinator, Rutgers head coach, most recently was with the Las Vegas Raiders? I don't know if it's going to be a massive drop-off, but it's not better. I mean, Al Golden was, in my eyes, the best, and in the eyes of voters, the best assistant coach out there. Other notable coordinator changes. I think this one needs to be discussed a lot, and that's Alabama bringing back Ryan Grubb. Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer were attached at the hip. Everywhere they went, there was Ryan Grubb with Kalen DeBoer, except last year. Right? Ryan Grubb was supposed to go to Alabama, showed up for what, a couple of days, and then got poached back by Seattle to be the offensive coordinator. That did not work. He's back in Alabama. And now you've got Ty Simpson down there looking to become a year one starting quarterback or a first year starting quarterback. He's been in the system for a couple of years. I think Ryan Grubb, massive, massive addition. And then the two others real quickly before we hit a break. Ben Arbuckle going to Oklahoma, that tandem that we see of John Mateer, Washington State quarterback, Ben Arbuckle, Washington State OC. They go to Oklahoma. Ton of pressure on Brent Venables this year with one of the most difficult schedules in the country. And then the last one, Jason Beck goes from New Mexico to Utah, brings on Devin Dampier. Utah, I think, wins the Big 12 this year, and Devin Dampier, with his OC, are going to flourish in Salt Lake City.